Valor Morghulis, she whispered as he died. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. We'll just barrel right along, and we're gonna go ahead with this episode 274 of the White Book. Time bringing you Team Honor, right? For another card review. I don't know how they keep winding up being Team Honor. Haven't they been for the last like 3 months?
Well, honor's the true virtue, so. That's why.
Yeah. Weird. I'm gonna have myself, Will, of course, Roy that you just heard, and I think Aaron is going to be rejoining us in a moment once his internet sorts itself out. He's having some power issues. Yeah. Okay. So, let's just get rolling here. This week, Team Honor is bringing you the review of There Is My Claim. We're gonna go ahead and get rolling with it in the interest of time because we've already dicked around for quite frankly both far too long and not nearly long enough. So we're gonna go through with our slightly newer review format where we're going to go ahead and read both cards for the houses and just kind of talk about them freeform for a few minutes and give the house as a whole a rating rather than round robining each individual card so we can save ourselves a few minutes. So shall we go ahead and jump right to it? I'm willing. I'll take one for the team. I rarely do this, but I'm willing to go first.
Cool. So whatever the case may be, I'm reading the neutrals or the last neutral.
Okay.
Just so we're all aware.
We'll figure it out when it
since
when
second edition players knew me as the guy that yelled about Valor pronouncing it wrong a lot. I feel like I deserve
Valar.
Okay.
Valar.
Valor.
Valor.
Yeah. All right, this is going to go on for way too long.
We are going to go
as many ways as we can for 20 minutes. and then again, only Patrick Day will be listening.
we're gonna go in the order of Will, Aaron, Roy, because that spells war, and awesome. It amuses me.
What is it good for?
Let us carry on.
Absolutely everything.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Oh God, politics brain.
Yeah,
hurts.
Exactly.
Every time
we're
I think
down that road.
Oh man, the first thing I get along reasonably well with Douchey Keith from Brotherhood. You can delete the word douchey if you really need to, but we get along reasonably well. The first thing he did when he saw me outside, he walked to me and went, "You must be so sad. I promise I voted for Hillary." It's like I appreciate that. I really genuinely appreciate that.
Oh my.
Alright.
Jojen Reed, House Star, okay. Non-loyal.
Yep. Alright, so here
Will's
we go.
Will's card, you douche.
Yeah. Jeez. And I tried to start it like 3 times, but Aaron just kept going. Okay. Here we are. Jojen Reed. He is a House Stark non-loyal unique. Cost 3, 1 strength. Intrigue and power icons. House Reed trait. Stealth. And reaction after Jojen Reed stands. Reveal the top card of each player's deck. You may either discard each of those cards or have each player draw 1 card. And then we also get the Wolf King, which is a unique Stark attachment, also non-loyal. 2 cost, it's a title, Stark character only, and attached character gains the King trait and does not kneel when declared as an attacker in a military challenge. So
I agree, those are the cards.
Yeah, you know, I kind of dig them. You know, a little more rush maybe in that non-kneeling on Wolf King might actually be a little too redundant for my taste in Stark, but I could see it having a home, particularly in Melee. And Jojen, I'm not going to lie, I love the relatively cheap stealthy intrigue. The ability, I think, is just kind of gravy. It definitely seems worthwhile to get some extra card draw or potentially, you know, deny your opponent some answers or something. So, I mean, I like it. Not amazed, but I like it.
I want to like Jojen, but he's so awkwardly costed in strength. And Stark has so many good people, because Stark and Lannister have so many good people now, thanks to the boxes, that, like, I don't think he usually makes the cut. He's good, but eh. It'll be a combo card when you're trying to set up Shaga stuff later. Or, what do we... Melisandre stuff later. Melisandre, right?
Shaga, yep.
That was who we changed it to, yep.
Cool. The Wolf King is just a one of in every Stark deck. It's a good card. You stick it in every Stark deck and forget about it. And when you see it, you go, hey, look, my Rob doesn't kneel or my Blackfish doesn't kneel and you're happy. And when you don't see it, you don't care.
Or Eddard. You forgot about that can go on fast, Eddie.
Oh, God. Yeah, Stark has an awful lot of good targets for this, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Anyone that has Renown.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mostly agree with both of you. I think I'm a little bit more bullish on Jojen, mostly because I think the stealth on the power icon is pretty useful, and same with stealth on the intrigue is nice as well, and you know the ability to draw a card if you don't need him for any of those other purposes is pretty solid. And again, yeah, Wolf King...
Wait, it's not optional. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah,
no,
you want to attack him, and then you can utilize this. You don't have to trade off between that.
Oh, right. It's when he stands, right? Yep. Sorry. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, he's good. He's a very solid card. So, yeah, these are thoroughly sort of B cards, I think.
Yeah. I think that feels pretty reasonable. In general, more the same for Stark, but very reasonable options of that more the same.
One's a B plus. One's a B minus. That's a B.
Okay. Wow, less going on there than I thought. I guess we'll just have to keep our eyes peeled for some kind of infinite loop with Jojen to deck everyone.
Oh,
later
Jojen's
right?
Jojen's gonna break. Yes. Yeah. That is accurate. Like yeah.
Just like whatever. The one in first edition, which is what my brain was going to.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put the Wolf King on Jojen, can you put the Wolf King on Jojen?
I mean,
yes. He's a star character.
But it doesn't do anything.
It makes him a king, which then allows...
Sorry. Doesn't do anything productive.
Which then allows his sister to stand him a bunch, if you can figure out a way to kneel him, I guess.
His sister? Did someone print a Mira?
Oh, not Mira. Who was it?
Jane.
From the Stark
Jane.
Box? Jane.
Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, please never print a Mira.
But he already works on... She already works on Jane. Or Jane already works on Jojen because he's a lord.
Yeah. Yep.
Is he? It just says... Yeah. House Reed here.
Oh yeah, it is just House Reed.
Because that's the first thing I checked before I said anything. Jerks. King Renly's host.
Well, that's fine. Yep, go for it.
Has Tyrell, non-loyal character, 6/4 military power, army, intimidate, and no attachments. While there is a summer plot card revealed, King Renly's host gains plus 4 strength. While there is a winter plot card revealed, King Renly's host cannot be declared as an attack. Caswell's Keep. 2-cost location, The Reach. After you reveal a plot card, choose a player. Pick the top 2 cards of that player's deck. Place one in the bottom, the other on top. Wait, Caswell's Keep is non-loyal? It's a really good Lannister card. Caswell's Keep's gonna be is just like a one of in every Tyrell deck forever, right? Like, I don't know why you wouldn't just stick one in there. It's card quality. Yeah. You can deny options to your opponent. Lots of really good stuff.
Yeah, I love that type of effect. It's maybe not as good as Scry is, Fate Seal is in Magic, kind of like we were talking about.
I don't know
about
what Magic means.
Yeah, basically this type of effect in Magic, kind of like we talked about that same sort of thing when we were talking about the Lion's Box, Tywin, but you're not making that kind of opportunity cost here, so this is just gravy, and you can use it to set yourself up if you need to, so, I mean, I dig that. I agree with you about, like, one everywhere.
Renly's host is too expensive for a card with a downside. Like, I'm not paying 6 and then running into a winter deck and then having this body sit here and make me sad.
Well,
I mean, he'd be a 6/8 that can't attack. But, like...
Yeah, I mean, he could still defend, which is okay.
No, not with Valor in the meta. Like...
Maybe.
And you're not paying 6 for just a big defensey body that has a keyword that doesn't work on defense.
If you pay 6... The one thing that I do... I mean, I like a couple things here, but the one thing that I'm intrigued about design-wise here is that it's something else right at that maximum benefit slot for Queen of Thorns.
Be right back. Short, while it is beneficial for Queen of Thorns, it doesn't... It's also another big body that doesn't have an intrigue icon, so I can't run in a Reigns deck either.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure if we would get stuff at that point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we had to eventually, right? Like, it's not like Terrell's owning the meta where we can't get more good cards for him. Be right back. Other than off.
I definitely agree with Aaron there that I think King Renly's host may see some play, I guess, in Melee, but I don't necessarily think it'll see much play.
Why in Melee?
Because I think it's going to be actually more reliable to see a summer plot in Melee than a winter.
That's fair.
Because there's just... You have 4, if you count yourself, opportunities for a summer plot card to reveal. And there's less winter plots that generally see play in Melee, at least in my experience. And that plus 4 strength on a power icon. And Intimidate, I think, is a very useful keyword in Melee. You know, the push to an unopposed. And, you know, and it doesn't punish... You know, as long as you're not going last, you know, it's a useful keyword. So, yeah, I think it's a much stronger card there than it is in Joust. And then Craswell's Keep is, you know, it's a fun card that it will be broken at some point. So, yeah, so I largely agree.
What makes you think it'll be broken? I don't think it'll be broken at all.
You'd really need some plot cycling effects.
Yeah, it has to be major plot cycling, because otherwise it's a plot phase and a Reigns phase action.
Yeah.
Pretty fun with Oh no, you can't use that with the mountain at all. And a Reigns deck.
Well, if there was... If you gave him a Lilbird or a Pointed...
You choose a player to look at the top card of a player's deck. You can't use it with the mountain for a different reason. You can't use it with the mountain because of Reigns. Yeah. You can't have Tyrell cards and Lannister cards.
Gotcha.
That's true.
So that would be very illegal.
Well, you could... Yeah, that's true.
You will never use him with the mountain in a Reigns deck, which means it's not going to be. It's going to have to, as of now, be a plot phase action, right? Which means that they will then draw whatever card you gave.
True.
Because there is no way to skip the draw phase that we're aware of.
Definitely that I'm not aware of.
C+.
I'm just going to go straight.
Yeah.
C. Maybe even C-.
Really?
I like to keep a lot more than you do, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm probably in the C plus range as a total. I think the keep is probably like a B minus, and the host is, I don't know, C minus to maybe C. So
yeah, I was gonna give the host a C minus and then like a B minus for Castle's keep, but Castle's keep might be being underrated. Like, card quality is really important in this game.
I mean, if I think it's about a B minus and it is a location, then I assume it's being underrated.
Fair point.
Trying to correct yourself from first edition, Will?
I'm trying. I don't know that I'm succeeding, but I am sure trying.
Well, locations just immediately get better with Valor in the meta, right?
Because they do and they don't, yeah, right?
Oh, I don't think that's true at all. I think they just do.
but you also run into the problem, right, where... I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a problem for Tyrell, but I think for Stark and Lannister, locations... You want to be top-decking new characters that you can play, and on a Valor turn, if you top-deck Crosswell's Keep and a Rose Road, you could be in trouble.
I mean, on the other hand, if you got the Keep early and you've been using it to filter through your own deck...
Yeah. I mean, functionally, it becomes a question of draw at that point. We're, like, draw in the meta, which has mattered mildly up to this point, becomes actively important with Valor in the meta. Mm-hmm. And anything that's helping your draw or providing things, and which in second edition has been a conscious decision to do a lot of with locations. Like, as we saw at Red Saturday, suddenly cards like Lannisport have value.
Absolutely.
Ooh, yeah.
We ready for Night's Watch?
Oh, I think so.
So no one is ready for Night's Watch.
Well, no one is ever ready for the Shadow Tower Mason, which is a non-unique Night's Watch non-loyal character. 2 cost, 2 strength, just a power icon. Builder, no attachments except weapon. While you control 3 or more Night's Watch locations and or attachments, Shadow Tower Mason gains a military icon and an intrigue icon. And then the Haunted Forest, which is a non-unique Night's Watch location, non-loyal, cost 2, the North. While the Haunted Forest is standing, it contributes 1 strength to your side during any challenge in which you are the defending player. Forced reaction. After you lose a challenge, kneel the Haunted Forest. Both of these cards are A cards. This is just the shit that...
These are S cards. These are more than
S cards. This is what defense wanted. I mean, the Haunted Forest basically says the first challenge that you initiate each round is going to be opposed. Your opponent. You know, in a joust game.
More than that, like, the Haunted Forest being non-loyal, plus, you know, shit like the wall, means the Shadow Tower Masons, which are also non-unique, are very quickly going to become 2 for 4 tricons. Good luck getting unopposed.
4?
Plus, the Haunted Forest is 1 strength.
Oh,
and then you get 1 strength from the wall.
From the wall.
So
now I gotcha.
You're sitting there with a 4 strength tricon, like, ugh.
Yeah, and
this makes For the Watch just silly. The plot?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, I've got 2 different thought processes going on here. One is that the Mason is, yes, crazy efficient. I'm really surprised to see that it counts both locations and attachments. Or, as it says.
I hear Craven is good.
I figured it would just be locations, but that attachment thing just puts it over the top with Craven.
I mean, also, the one, I don't remember what it's called. There's another Night's Watch attachment that's good in defense.
The sword?
Yeah, the sword thing. Practice sword?
Yeah, practice sword, yeah.
Yeah, that thing is good too. Like, you stick 1 or 2 of those in, just like they're good on setup, and yeah. Night's Watch is nasty. Like, this is exactly the point, I think, where Night's Watch is super T1. Not that it wasn't T1 before, but, like, almost every answer starts being answered by cards like this.
And the thing about the Shadow Tower Mason, though, is it also makes the non-loyal defense package a really solid banner for something like, you know, Martell or Barra or something like that, because you get these efficient defenders, you get the Haunted Forest to help put prevent unopposed challenges, and of course you get the win condition of the wall alongside Craven, alongside the ranging parties, alongside Castle Black. You know, it's at this point I think that defense package is great even as a banner.
Even if you're not running a defense package, Haunted Forest is not a bad pull. Like, It's just like, oh, by the way, you don't get unopposed one extra time per round is not like a bad like one or two of in a random deck.
Well, I mean, okay, I've got a couple thoughts again going on here, though the second one is still related to the earlier one I didn't make it to, but the Shadow Tower Mason and the whole Banner defense package, I do think it's worth pointing out though that you're going to need to go in pretty heavy on that, and or maybe kind of make this like a false banner type situation to make sure that you hit those three different ones. Like if the wall, Kraven, and Haunted Forest are your only three different cards that fulfill the Shadow Tower Mason's criteria, like your odds of hitting his activation are not as good as I would want them to be relying on him.
Sure. Add a we said what the hell is that practice sword?
Practice blade.
Yeah, that thing. Add a couple of those because they help your setup. Add whatchamacallit. Add a castle black. Castle Black is awesome. And then add a couple of the ones from the Lannister box. Not Lannister box, from the Stark box.
Shadow Tower.
Yep. Hey, the Shadow Tower makes weird.
Oh, not saying it's impossible, but it's not quite
it's not
just
as a given. Yes,
the small little package. Like you're gonna still need to commit to activate that. But the Haunted Forest, though, I don't know. I mean, I think it's good, but I don't necessarily think it's insurmountable. I think there's some room to play around it here, but it forces you to change the way, like the order that you're initiating your challenges against Night's Watch from how you normally would. I think most folks normally are going to be shooting to get through whatever dinky challenge they can, probably intrigue, hopefully unopposed, to deactivate the wall or something. But the Haunted Forest, I think, is going to reward folks more for going in hard on something else, say maybe a military that they can come over the top with rather than around, so that they can try to deactivate the forest and then get around with an intrigue.
Yeah, but now they just have fewer challenges to do that, right? Like, that's the problem. It's like you very often against Night's Watch need to, like, force a tough decision, and Haunted Forest just, like, you sit there and go, well, I don't declare defenders. The Haunted Forest just did that for you. They committed like half their board to that military challenge to get the Haunted Forest knelt, and you've knelt literally no character.
Yeah.
It's not when you have another participating defender or anything. It depends.
Yeah. It really probably should have that.
It should have had. Yeah, this is an S level pack for Night's Watch. I think this is what takes Night's Watch over the top. We saw these cards in the whatchamacallit. Draft packs, and they're just silly good cards. I think Night's Watch Fealty is so super T1 right now.
Yeah, I think these are going to be big boons. I think I'd definitely give Night's Watch an A in this pack. Okay, there we go. All right, Roy, do you have a rating for Night's Watch?
S, as Aaron said. Fantastic cards.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, so it's back to me for Baratheon then. We've got Stannis. He's a unique, loyal Baratheon card. 7 cost, 6 strength, military and power icons, king and lord traits, and during power challenges, each participating non-king character gets -1 strength. And reaction, after you win dominance, choose a non-loyal character. That character cannot stand during the standing phase this round. Then we also get the Red God's Blessing, a non-unique, non-loyal Baratheon attachment, 2 cost, blessing and relore traits, and attached character gains the relore trait and gets +1 strength for each relore character you control. I feel pretty good about Baratheon here. It's not directly a Neil card, but it's another R'hllor card to trigger Mel, which I kind of like, and a not insignificant strength boost. And when you have characters like Robert floating around with Intimidate, I can see that that being useful, as if he doesn't get big enough on his own. But oh well.
Well, it goes on anyone, so like, just
yeah. Yeah, it could be useful on a lot of folks. I just happen to think of his Intimidate offhand. And I like this Stannis a lot. I kind of wish he had Renown, but I guess this is why you stick Lightbringer on him. But it seems like a really useful ability between him and, let's see, it was Edric, right? In the Lannister box. You can really hamper an opponent's ability to ever compete with you on dominance.
Well, he doesn't help you in dominance.
Okay, yeah, good point. Because that character's already knelt. But it keeps them out of business from there on out.
Yep. I think he's good. He's probably a one-of. He's a one-of in that defensive deck, right? Like the win power challenges and dominance and win the game that way deck. But, like, I don't know if I run him otherwise.
He's definitely a very different sort of strategy than the core set Stannis, right?
Than most big dudes, like, because he's not really doing too much in challenges himself.
Yeah. He doesn't even have to be in the power challenge for that minus one strength. And actually, interestingly enough, they don't have to be participating against you. So that could do some really interesting stuff.
You're missing that it affects all your own characters.
Right, right. But I'm thinking about...
It makes math table a giant headache.
When opponents are going at each other and whatnot.
Yeah. Oh, melee. Got it. Right. I always forget that's a thing. He's good. I just don't think he's great. And Red God Blessing is, I think, probably ends up being more of a Banner of the Stag card than a Stag card. Like, I don't know if Barrow really has space for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point about Banner, though. Like, that's a nice little piece, probably, to the Neil package. Like, it's virtually all R'hllor anyway, if you're looking at the Banner stuff, so it slots in pretty well.
Yeah, and it can function, since it's non-terminal, it can function like Lightbringer. You can put on a Chud, kill the Chud, get it back, and heal someone with Melisandre next turn. And the fact that it's non-unique makes it a little bit better on setup than Lightbringer. And so if you draw another one, it's not a dead card. You know, so I think it has some flexibility. And, of course, the plus one strength for each R'hllor character. And it counts whatever character gets attached to. So I think it's actually a pretty good redundancy creating R'hllor card. I think this Stannis is probably a little bit better than Aaron's giving him credit for, having seen him in draft. He's a pretty nightmare of a character when he gets going. I think he's interesting. He is definitely a bomb to help power a dominance deck that's not just a Neil deck that happens to also have a dominance package. So I like both of these Barrow cards. They're not revolutionary, but they're definitely interesting, and they continue to sort of explore Barrow themes in a really coherent way. So from a design perspective, I think they're both really well done cards. So I would say they're probably B cards.
Yeah, I'm going C+. I just don't like them as much.
Overall, I think I probably give Breatheon a B- out of this. Though you did, you know, just kind of bring me around to a nice thought there, Roy, about the whole Chud recycling aspect of Red God's Blessing, in that the strength boost can make that Chud actually, you know, impactful for one challenge phase till you kill them off and such, which I kind of like. Like, that's a nice extra piece to that kind of engine to get you additional value out of the character you're going to wind up killing to keep it running. So I dig that.
Okay. On to Lannister?
Yeah.
I know... Wait, who read Baratheon?
I did. So it's you.
Yeah, but you have to read without his beard.
Do I?
You absolutely do.
Alright.
So I'll read Tanda, then you can read without his beard, just because, okay. Like, no one else on Earth deserves to read without his beard more. It's your card.
Thanks.
So Tanda Stokeworth is a non-loyal Lannister card. 3/3 power icon, lady.
Lady's always useful. After you marshal 10 to Stokeworth, each player gains 3 gold. If you can manage to go second. Someone or other posted a deck. I know I'm supposed to let you read it without his beard. Shut up. I just want to say this. Someone or other posted a deck with 3 Cersei's Wheelhouse, and I'm 99% sure that this card goes in that deck. Go ahead, Will.
Alright, without his beard, it's a House Lannister non-loyal event at 0 cost. Reaction, after you win an intrigue challenge, discard up to 3 cards at random from the losing opponent's hand. Then, that player draws 2 cards. And actually, you know, for old time's sake, I brought a little something special to this particular podcast recording. Longtime listeners are going to recognize this sound.
Just cut it again. It's better and this time.
There we go. There we go. That happened. It is no more.
But it's better this time.
It is definitely better than the original. So
it is definitely better.
Yeah, because now it's actually card advantage, right?
Card parity, actually. Yeah. But it's at least not strict disadvantage. So that's a plus. And we first saw it in draft, which I do have to admit, this is actually a very strong card in draft, since they are unlikely to have the kind of, you know, strong consistency that makes this such a crapshoot in Joust.
Well, no, this card is amazing in Joust if you're running the new Cersei, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, that is the only deck that I bother with this in, and maybe not even then.
But no, I'm pretty sure I would run, like, at least maybe a 1 or 2. Like, that sudden 3 power gain is awesome.
As long as they have the 3.
Hey, wait, why would it be 3 power? Because you just get power for each instance in which cards are discarded.
Don't you have to do everything 1 at a time? Is that not the case anymore?
That's not the case anymore. She's it could be, but she's worded in a way that says, you know, 1 or more cards. So, you know.
So each time that 1 or more. Oh, that's sad. Then I guess I'm not running this in that deck.
Yeah, if I only get 1 power out of that, it is not even worth it in the Cersei deck. Jeez.
Nope. All right, so I'm going to give this house a D. I think Tanda is okay and goes in that deck that's running 3 Cersei Wells. I don't even know what deck it was that's running 3 Cersei Wells, but it definitely existed. I think it was the Stalic Lightning Fealty.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, might run 1 copy of her in some kind of Bear Lion or the reverse, just because then I can also use Scene in the Flames to strip something out of their hand that they could, you know, spend that 2 on a put to the sword or something, or that 3, sorry, on like a put to the sword or tears or something. But like, I'm not excited about her, so, and definitely not without his beard. So Lannister gets like a, gosh, I think a D plus out of this pack for me.
I could see that. I'm totally just looking through Lannister decks right now to see where the hell. Okay, yeah, there was a Lannister Fealty that won a Rome Store Championship that ran 3 Cersei's Wheelhouse and 1 Lannisport, and reasonably, you know, 2 Riddle and shit. But yeah, I think I would probably stick Tanda in that deck if I were to play that deck, which I would not. But still.
So in this one deck that won in 1 tournament in Europe, this slots in.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. So
that's exactly my point. Yes. It's a good after if you're running Valor card, I could see running this. Like, because they'll obviously have more gold that turn any goddamn way, right? So you just plop this, and you're like, all right, well, now you know.
Yeah.
I have 3 more gold to get a second body out. You kill Tanda.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely a card that was not designed to be abused horribly, right? Because she has the when after you marshal instead of like throwing her in for Harrenhal when you need the 3 gold for something.
Oh, that would have been cool.
She is a lady, though. So she's got the noble cause and the synergy with both treachery and
Things I Do for Love.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I mean a power icon, which is semi rare in Lannister. Yeah, no, I'm not running her. I'm gonna stop pretending.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah,
she's just not that good. Neither is without his beard. So yeah, I think Will's sort of just take a D. Like, this is certainly the Lanny haters should take heart with this chapter pack. This is not a chapter pack that Lannister gained a lot of efficient, interesting cards. So, yay.
Yay. Okay. Does that send it to Roy for Greyjoy then?
Yep. And so this gives us our new version of Aaron Dampair, who is a unique character. House Greyjoy, non-loyal. 6 cost, 4 strength, intrigue power, drown god, ironborn, lord, reaction. After a character is saved, either stand it or kneel it. And then King Balon Solar, Greyjoy, loyal, location, 0 cost, Iron Islands, reaction after you win initiative, gain 1 gold. King Balon Solar will probably be a 1x in most Greyjoy decks going forward. Hey,
can I make fun of the other podcast?
Sure.
John, which one?
John sent me this deck, and he was so excited for it. Like, I haven't seen him this excited for a deck since pre-Gen Con. It was a Barra deck running, like, all the Kingdom Plots and 3 of that card. And I was like, can you go look at that card again? He was like, why? What? It's the economy. Economy is so good in this game. And I was like, look closely at that card. He was like, oh my god, it's fucking unique. Yeah. It's like, it made me so happy that he was so excited for, like, days waiting to show me this deck. And then I'm like, no. The entire concept falls apart. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a 1X, they, not a 3X card.
Yeah, it's a 1X.
It's nice on setup. Anyway. And then the Dampair. He's a cute card.
He's a bad guy.
But yeah, I don't see why there aren't enough synergies with him, unlike the core set version, which has a lot of synergies. So I just really don't. Yes, of course, saves is a Greyjoy theme, but he has to survive, so you have to save him. Oh no, that's not true, because it's an interrupt, right? And your reaction.
No, it's a reaction. It's a reaction.
But it's a reaction to the.
Oh, it's a reaction. Oh god, that's obnoxious.
So he can be dead. He can die, right, on a Valor turn. So you can kneel any
all the cost.
So, yeah, I mean, that makes him a little bit better, but still I think he is
bad.
Yeah, not particularly good. He's definitely like a C- card. So, yeah. Greyjoy, yeah. People who are looking for fresh face to Greyjoy, fresh air in Greyjoy, whatever natural metaphor you want to use, this is not the chapter pack for that. So this is like a C- kind of thing.
I was going
I think C is probably fair for me overall. I actually like King Balon Solar quite a bit more than the Braytheon equivalent, because I think you are winning initiative much more consistently in Greyjoy and with a wider range of plot options at your disposal than just specifically playing kingdoms. So I don't know. There's that, and Dampair sure exists, but that's all about all I've got. I just don't think it's going to be a common ability like you were saying.
The one thing I will say in this Dampair's face, that green icon is nice on a character that can't be first node. So
it's not like they're trying to protect the wall in Greyjoy.
Well, but still,
maybe.
Like, it's not a high enough strength green icon that, like, I feel comfortable relying too much on it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Targ?
Yeah, I guess that's back to me for Targ, then. Mm-hmm. All right, we've got Pyat Pree. He is non-loyal, unique, 6 cost, 4 strength, intrigue and power icons, the warlock trait. And reaction, after you win a challenge in which Pyat Pree is participating, search the top X cards of your deck for a Targaryen attachment or event, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Shuffle your deck. X is the strength by which you won that challenge. And then we have Vaes Tolaro. That is a non-loyal, unique, 1-cost Essos location. With the interrupt, when a character with 1 or more power is killed, kneel Vaes Tolaro to move 1 power from that character to Vaes Tolaro, and up to 2 power instead if that character's strength is 0. I don't know that Vaes Tolaro is going to be great. I mean, I'm going to play it in one axe at least in melee to kind of snipe some power from people, I'm sure. Payapri, I do like. I'm not super enthused about that 6 cost, but being able to dig for Dracarys or what have you, especially if I'm shuffling those back into my deck after I use them, I really like that. So, yeah. I feel okay overall about Targaryen. Not the best house in here, but pretty okay. Maybe like a C+ for me.
Of, I like Payapri a lot. I think that you're going to probably run one of in basically every Targ deck. A lot of what he reads is like, you better defend. It's just that its attachment or event is really, really good. Targ has a lot of good attachments and events, and like, they have attachments and events that you draw more, which is also really nice. So I'm a really big Pri fan. He's expensive and it's awkward, but at least he's expensive with an intrigue icon, and like, just there's a lot Targ wants to get with that. Like, I can see overcommitting because I know I better find that Drac or that whatever.
And right.
Like, you can shuffle stuff back in, and like, when your deck gets shallow mid game, he just gets better and better. I like him. I'm definitely gonna run a one of him, and we'll see if that becomes more with Valor in the meta. Like, he would have been a 3 of before Valor. But right now he's a one of with maybe more. Vaeslore is a fine one of melee card that I'm gonna completely forget exists because I don't play melee.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hyatt is really interesting because Targaryen has a lot of swingy events and attachments: Dracarys, Crown of Gold, Fire and Blood, which can just refill your board on a Valor turn, and when you're from your behind. So the ability to dig for that and make your deck more consistent is exactly the kind of things that Targ needs, since Targ doesn't have a huge amount of native draw. That's why they like things like Shadow Black Lane, and he is sort of a Shadow Black Lane on a stick. So with plus, that can get Crown of Gold.
You can use him and Shadow Black, right?
Yeah, you can use him and Shadow Black on an Intrigue Challenge.
I would do both.
Yeah. So it's, and as Aaron said, he's Intrigue icon, so that also helps Targ Crossing be a little bit more consistent, both in getting Dracarys, getting Crowns of Gold, getting Beggar Kings.
Searching deeper, right?
Yep.
Like, yeah.
And awesome. Searching deeper. So
good point.
Yeah, so he's a really good card. I think he's actually one of the stronger cards in the pack. He's a fun card. Like, it's a fun thing to do, so I really like him. The Vase to Loro, or however you want to pronounce it. Yeah, it's just a, maybe a one of melee card. Maybe there's some deck out there that's really fun that wants to abuse this, but since it has to kneel, you're only going to get, you know, 1 to 2 power from it a turn, and your opponent has to have renowned characters. So, yeah, it's not particularly interesting. So, yeah, I think Payapri is the flashpoint of this pack. And again, I'm going to have to give the pack a B for Targ just on the strength of that one character.
Yeah, it was going B-. I think Vestalora drags it down a little bit. It's about a B card.
So B-. Yeah. Yeah, I probably ought to bump that up to a B- for my C+. I mean, I do really like Pri. I think I was just initially downgrading the house as a whole in the pack a little too far based on Vestalora.
Makes sense. Okay. Ready for the next house?
Yes, yep. Sir.
I get Martell, my favorite house in second edition. Where the hell did that happen? But Elia Sand, Martell, non-loyal, 3/3, intrigue, Bastard and Sand Snake. After you lose a challenge, choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gains stealth, limit twice per phase. And Burning on the Sand, House Martell, loyal event, costs 0. After you lose an unopposed challenge, set the claim on the winning opponent's revealed plot card to 0 until the end of the challenge. I like it. It's not claim replacement, though, right?
It is not, but right. According to the current ruling, which I don't think Alex, K-Tom, Nate, or Danny have overwritten, it sets that, so any other claim-raising effects do not work on it.
Nice.
So, okay. So Miri still works, obviously.
Yeah, and whatchamacallit, the Greyjoy thing that no one runs.
Or
what's a Greyjoy?
Seastone Chair.
Seastone Chair. But other things, you know, don't. So.
Yeah. Like, winter is coming. For
or Tyrion. Like the new Tyrion.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, burning's good. It's not great. It's probably a 2 of in a Martell deck, right? Like, it's good when you don't just don't have Claim Soak, or when, like, again, Valor matters now, so, like, protecting Intrigue or stopping that, like, giant power challenge they're trying to swing through. But Elia is money, too.
Like, yeah, Elia is a dump on Elia.
I mean, Elia is the answer to the Night's Watch that you're worried about, right? Mm. Like, you just throw the characters out there that you need to.
You 100% just forgot that Benjen exists.
Oh, yeah. That's fair.
And they can just run 3 Benjen if Elia becomes a common counter, because he doesn't die. So you don't care about seeing dupes of him.
Yeah, and if you kill him, say, with Tyene or something, you're just giving them power.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's a problem. But, yeah, Elia is a really good card in that, like, she also synergizes well with Nymeria and with Tyene, in that giving Tyene stealth is really good. And synergizes well with a jumpy sand snake guy whose name is
Harmon Uller.
Sir Harmon Uller, indeed. Man, thank God we didn't get the first edition version of him back.
Yep.
But yeah,
the massively expensive Martell ally.
I think
the non both.
He was like, wasn't he 4 cost? He wasn't that expensive.
No, he was 3.
Yes, yeah, 3. I ran a 1 of him in most of my Martell crap.
Yeah,
but. Yeah,
but you cried when he got dissensioned.
I mean, it was Martell. There were always dissension targets anyway. It's not like Martell wasn't running dissension targets in first edition. Which, you know, the Patrick Day cares about, no one else does. So we should stop having just Patrick Day.
Yeah, we should just keep moving on. I mean, Martell, it looks pretty good.
I think these are both good cards. Neither one's great.
Yep,
but they're both very good cards.
Burning is definitely less strong than first edition. I don't know. I think it was broken in
first edition.
Yeah,
definitely.
Where every time someone remembered it existed, they put it in a deck and won a tournament.
But because of that, I think I'm a little lower on it than Aaron. Just because most of the time in second edition right now, this is just dropping, you know, 1 claim by 1, and you're trading a card to do it, so it's just kind of even. Since most of the time that claim you're protecting from is a card destruction. So I think I see this becoming much more useful if 2 claim plots and kind of that hard aggro control winds up becoming a thing in second edition. Then Burning on the Sand, I think, starts looking so much better.
It's
good for snow protection.
Well, yeah. I've been playing a lot of Martell, and Martell is not playing a lot of cards each turn. They want small control-y boards, and sometimes, like, I'm like, well, I'm gonna have to eat Valor, I'm gonna have to eat Military Claim with this good character, because like, I just, there's no better choice of what to do right now, and not having to eat that Military Claim sometimes will be huge. Especially because you still lost the challenge, you can still trigger all your other challenge loss effects.
Right,
and it also creates redundancy, right? So, yeah. Martell, right? You know, right now has Gaston, which punishes your opponent for winning challenges against you, and Vengeance for Elia, which punishes them. And this creates sort of the third card that like significantly punishes your opponent for winning a challenge against you, which is exactly the kind of synergies that Martell needs. So I think burning.
You get Sunspear. You get your
Sunspear. Yep, that's another one.
Call it trigger. The other location that I like a lot. That's named is now escaping me.
Boneway.
Boneway.
Great. So, and it's a less NPE card, not just because it doesn't cancel the challenge, but the fact you at least get that unopposed power as well. So, you know, there are ways that there's counterplay to this card, I think, in a way that there wasn't for Burning in first edition. So, yeah, it's a pretty balanced but strong card, particularly with where the card pool is right now. So, I definitely think B plus for all these cards here? Or are we getting or are you guys more A minus territory?
B plus sounds right. I wasn't going up to A. No, neither of these are A cards.
Yeah, I'm thinking flat B myself. I mean, you know, she's still a monocon and I'm not as big on the event, so I still respect them both, but I think it's probably only a B for Martell as a house.
I think they're both about B plus cards because, like, every deck I build, I'm at least considering burning, and like I'm never gonna really regret running it. And every deck I build, I'm putting it. All right, can we just do the neutrals one at a time? Because doing the neutrals as a group never really works.
Yeah, no, that's what we've been doing.
So we're gonna do them one at a time.
So let's see, whose turn is it? Is
it's R's turn.
All right, Roy, you're up.
His favorite card.
Yeah, which is Jaqen H'ghar. He is a unique 7-cost Tricon, 5-strength ally, and he has a reaction. After he enters play, place a Valor Margulis token on up to 3 different unique characters. If he leaves play, discard those tokens from play. Reaction. After you win a challenge in which Jaqen H'ghar is attacking alone, choose and kill a character with a Valor Margulis token. I hate a neutral Miri. Yes, he has more drawbacks, besides obviously being a massively expensive ally, so you can spend 2 gold to negate your opponent's 7 gold. He's still a really annoying card that demands an answer as soon as he comes into play, can run away with games. He is a swing card of the worst kind. You either have an answer to him or you don't, and if you don't, your life is about to get a whole lot less fun. I really, really dislike more neutral kill. Yes, he's an important character from the books, an even more important character in the show. I still do not like this neutral point-and-click kill at all.
At the very least, and he has to, the targets that of his have to be in play when he comes into play.
It's true. They have to be unique as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't catch the unique on my first read-through. But he also does not replace Claim, like Miri does, so there's an upside on him.
And he's got the extra icon.
I don't know if that's an upside, because then you still get Power Claim and Intrigue Claim, and you get to kill somebody.
No, upside for him.
I mean,
for
him. Yeah, yes. Upside if you are the one using him.
Yes.
Yeah. I think he goes at least one of in most Lannister decks, depending on how impactful Valor is.
And Tyrell, I think, likes him too. They want
Tyrell could use this kind of punch for sure, and they can make sure that he wins that challenge by himself.
Greyjoy, I think, also.
I like that a lot.
Greyjoy, definitely. So that's 3 houses. I don't think I put him anywhere else off the top of my head. Maybe Targ, but probably not.
He's a little expensive for Targ.
Yeah, Targ ends up having gold trouble.
They've got a lot of stuff at that top end they want to play. I might try and find a spot for one of him in like a Vera build as a more permanent answer to some things.
I mean, I don't think you ever run more than one of him.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I think he's a one of in whatever deck, maybe two. Like, with Valor in the meta and all the different discard stuff, and he can't take bodyguards. Maybe more in Greyjoy, because Greyjoy's got Iron Mines, too.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Lenny Kraken. Because now you've got Lenny Kraken with functional Miri.
Yeah. Well, on top of the Seastone chair.
Yeah. Well, no, Lenny Kraken cannot run.
Oh, yeah.
And he works if you somehow get him to go off unimposed on a military challenge.
Work before Claim.
Yeah.
Right.
He's going
But to you be, could do both.
Yeah, he's going to be very good.
Yeah. So what is he, a B plus even with the ally drawback? Still be an A.
I think he's an A minus. Maybe higher, but probably not, because while I don't expect a lot of dissension unless he becomes very popular, I do expect Sir Aerys to see a lot of play when he's released, and that should be relatively soon. I don't remember when.
I think he's in the last chapter pack, actually.
Okay, so I guess not relatively soon, given that FFG doesn't like printing cards.
So early 2017.
Yeah, early 2019. I got it.
No, that's for Winds of Winter. I'll go with A-. I just hate this card. I just think it's a really frustrating card that they printed, and I think it highlights some of the design drawbacks of second edition in a way that's just really frustrating for me in a pack that I think otherwise is filled with some pretty interesting cards, and we're about to get to the most interesting one in a bit.
We're getting there.
You will.
Back to me for Isle, then. Mm-hmm. Isle of Ravens is a 1-drop unique. Course neutral has the Old Town trait and action. Kneel Isle of Ravens to choose a card in any player's discard pile and shuffle it into its owner's deck. I mean, I can definitely think of a lot of decks where I'm willing to play one of these.
A lot? Any,
well, okay. I mean, any deck where I am seriously considering, was it Shadow Black Lane? I think I definitely want Isle of Ravens as well.
Yeah, I think I only run this in Targ. I think that's the only one where it's really actually impactful enough.
You wouldn't necessarily really think Martell?
Maybe Martell, but definitely Targ. Martell is second on that list. I mean, at that point, maybe Barra.
I would be strongly considering it in Lannister.
No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
What does Lanny want to get back really badly? It wants treachery. Treacheries, yeah.
Treacheries for sure. And let's see, which of the bounce events is it that only discards?
Hear me roar.
Yeah. It lets you jump.
Doesn't
those
whatchamacallit discard also? The bottom five card.
Never bet against my family, or I never bet against my family.
Back. That's not terrible.
And that's one where you would want your deck to be shuffled sometimes as well. Deck is and this is so just a damn choice.
That deck is so goddamn tight for space.
It's true. I mean, it's one cost as well, so it's good on setup.
I could even maybe see a Barra deck where I run this to shuffle Rulor stuff back into my deck.
I mean, yeah, you get all these events, and Barra really like Shadow Black.
Yeah.
Shadow Black should have been a win by five trigger.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can, like I said, I can think of several decks where I would strongly consider a copy. Will it always make the cut? Maybe not, but I'm considering it enough that I think I probably... I mean, it's not amazing, but it's got some combo, or at least, I should say, synergy potential, so I'm feeling maybe like a C+.
You are such a Melisandre. No, I think a B-. Yeah, C+, B- in that vicinity.
I think it's... I'm more bullish. I think it's B-. I think it's well-costed to see play. It's just an action. It can be done at any time, which gives it huge flexibility. It lets you play one of events and things like that, and it shuffles your deck, which I think is actually an underrated thing in second edition. So, yeah, I really like this card actually. So B- for what it is, very very solid.
I'm gonna give it exactly an 80. Nope, 79. I'm gonna give it exactly a 79.
So a C+.
We don't give numbers.
C+. I'm giving a number. It's a number card. All right. King Beyond the Wall. Anyone else want to read this since I'm doing the next one?
I'll do it. King Beyond the Wall, neutral, attachment, two cost, title, wilding character only, attached character gains a king trait. While attached character is attacking a player with a higher power total than you, raise the claim value on your reveal plot card by one. Oh, man, I know it's kind of late, but this card just kind of puts me to sleep.
Yeah, I just don't feel like it has a good home at the moment. Like in the kind of joust focused wilding stuff that we have right now with ambush and whatnot, like there's not a great home for an attachment that's not Mance, who's already quite expansive, and a king. And then in melee, where this ability looks great, the wildlings don't fit very well. So I don't know. I want to like it, but I don't think it has a home.
It's gonna be great on Rattleshirt. You know, that card we never got in first edition that we probably never get in the game because FFG likes forgetting he exists. I have no fucking idea. He has Raiders, so maybe he'll exist now.
Probably not.
No, I would assume that as well.
I don't know. I mean, it's still a strong ability, so I think I'm wary of knocking it out of the C range, but I don't look for this to C player right now. I think we need a little bit of a different wilding character base to really get this one out there.
Yeah, it's like a C- card. It's expensive and only can go on wilding characters, and the best wilding characters right now, besides Mance, who's already a king, can't take attachments. So,
I mean, I would want to make Osha a king. She can take attachments, right?
It's true, but then you're playing Starker Banner of the Wolf.
Yeah.
And there's only... If you're just playing Mono Stark, you know, there's the neutral wildlings and then Osha. So.
Yep.
There's just not as many targets for this. I don't know. It's
not that interesting a card.
So let's move on then.
It doesn't even seem like a like Mance. It doesn't feel like it's a card that makes that character Mance either.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just not very interesting.
No, Mance tries to grab more claim. Right? Like,
but it's Mance, well, he tries to gain more like power claim. Like I don't know. It's just,
well, yeah, but it increases the claim. The other player has more power. The Night's Watch, the Night's kingdom, Watch is... the seven kingdoms have more power yeah. than Mance, right? So Mance, when they have more power than him and he's attacking them,
he wants to hurt them.
He doesn't want to hurt them, but Mance is all about tricks and illusions.
There is his claim. Valar, Morghulis. All men must die. Neutral? Plot? 2 income? We don't care about King Beyond the Wall, that's why we moved on. 0 initiative, 0 claim, 5 reserve, plot deck limit 1, omen. When revealed, kill each character. So, Roy, how has this affected the meta already?
It has affected it very strongly. It obviously pushes Banner of the Kraken up a lot.
Hey, what one read Saturday?
Lanny Kraken, surprising no one, played by a really great player. The final table at Red Saturday had one deck that was sort of... It was actually kind of what you could expect of a Valor meta. One deck that's an efficient Lannister deck that's just about taking efficient Greyjoy cards and saves, slapping them with efficient Lannister cards, and you get a deck. Piloted very well by Tom Malucci, who former Star Wars World Champion, now Red Saturday Champion. And then you have Dave Stroms' deck, which is a much more creative deck that, you know, that is a control deck. It's a deck that tries to abuse Harrenhal and Ambush and uses Valor. You know, it doesn't have any characters in play. It Valors and then plays out characters via Ambush or Harrenhal, of course, because Harrenhal doesn't require you to have any gold. Right? So it changes the meta a lot. But the one thing that I noticed at Red Saturday that I think analysts like Aaron and other people who have really thought and theorycrafted about this card is that it is not what it was in first edition. It is not just you pick 6 plots and put Valor as your 7th plot. In order to use this card successfully in second edition, you have to build your deck around that, either in the sense of going for Banner of the Kraken and building saves into your deck beyond dupes, or going the Dave Stroms route and really designing your deck to exploit the power of Valor. The ability to just clear a board on demand. So it is going to change the meta. Expect, you have to plan for this. And this is the one thing that Red Saturday hammered home for me. You have to expect this card from this phone. And it will fuck you over if you try to play, a card, the game as it was up to this point. You know, if you just...
I don't know that that's true entirely.
I think it's true enough. It can punish you. It's not going to... Don't expect a first turn.
But it also might not. It, like... Like, it... We tested with Valor for Gen Con. Like, I feel like... Well, that was definitely true at Red Saturday. And it might be true going forward. When we tested for Gen Con, we assumed Valor was legal. So we built a lot of decks with Valor. And a lot of what we were finding with Valor... And again, a lot of this is against Stark, and Stark is just like, hey, fuck you, Valor. We're just going to run close call and shrug and move on.
Yeah, Stark's the problem.
But, like, a lot of what we found was, unless both players were running Valor, a lot of the times the player that was running Valor just lost, because it was so hard to recover from. So I don't think it's an every deck thing, but, like, I also don't think you have to plan against it as much, depending on what you're playing.
Here's where I disagree with you, Aaron. I think you're absolutely correct that it is not something that should go in every plot deck, and it's something you need to really carefully consider before putting in your plot deck. Like, I mean, really carefully consider. But I do think you need to plan around it, because you can definitely be caught with your pants down if you don't.
I think it'll affect your gameplay, but I don't know how much it affects your deck building. Like, I think that as you play the game, you have to be aware that Valor exists at this point. You have to look at what you're marshalling, when you're marshalling it, how you're marshalling it, and make sure you hold back. I think your hand matters more by this card's sheer existence. But I remain uncertain as to how much of your deck building has to change. A few weeks ago, we were going to do episode 222, the deck building episode, over again. And I feel like Valor, in a way, that sort of has to shake out a little bit. And I don't know that it does until we start getting past store championships. Because, like, it'll be at store championships, but I don't think, like... Like, that's when people experiment, until we start getting to the road to Stalic next year, which is the next major thing that happens. Will?
Gives folks a lot of time between now and then to be tinkering. I mean, and that's definitely something that I want to explore. I mean, on the one hand, I do think I agree with Aaron that I feel that it shifts gameplay more than deck building at the moment, and I think a good chunk of that is on the back of the huge boost that duplicates got in second edition. It's not like you're not going to be running, you know, your 3x Roberts or Tywins or whatever, thanks to Valor, but it does maybe mean that when you've got your unprotected Tywin on the board, you aren't immediately rushing to also dump the unprotected Tyrion next to him, and things like that. So I think it's going to force more, let's say, tactical decisions to account for it rather than strategic right now. But on sort of the flip side of that, I do hope and want to explore that Valor maybe opens up some more deck build options rather than kind of forcing some of the existing game plans to change. I'm really hoping that this is the tool that some type of kind of Tyrell control build has been waiting to abuse on the back of their card draw and the Arbor, as well as, you know, like we were talking about Jaqen earlier, and that type of thing. And so basically, I do think it opens up new things, but doesn't necessarily force the old things to change. But I do think it's good for the meta. So
I think it's amazingly needed for the meta. I can only pray this shakes up the game enough for it to be interesting. And like, everyone should know this by now, because I've said this a million times, I don't find where the game has been especially interesting. A large part of that is that I spent pre-Gen Con playing 8 bajillion games and came up with that Stark Fealty and Lanny Dragon were the 2 best decks, and, you know, hey, history seems to prove me fairly right. But just that whole, like, those decks are built around the same basic concept. Find the big guys that do the big things, drop them on the board, turn them sideways, don't screw up. Stop the other guy from doing the big bad things that they want to do before they can, one way or the other, and do your big bad things. So, those, if you can pull that off, like, the meta was really, really straightforward. Like, you'd occasionally get great games, you'd occasionally get really, like, swingy, boring games, and it was really hard to tell which. We also saw the last several tables at Worlds where things were swung entirely on luck of the draw and not basically really skill. Valor, if it works as it should, and this is such a huge if, has the ability to shift us away from that, where, like, there will still be games where Valor can't save you at all, but it should help mitigate the amount of those.
Help more games not get to that point.
Yeah, help more games not just be, like, pure variance. Like, I drew really poorly the first rounds. All I saw was economy locations. I've dropped a bunch of economy locations. My opponent's running me over. I Valored, but now because I saw those economy locations, I have at least a shot of climbing back. As opposed to, like, well, I ran 9 economy locations, and my opening hand, I saw 4, and what are you going to do?
Yeah. Or, hey, they got the turn 1 Miri kill, and now, thanks to that opening, they are going to get the Miri kill every turn from here on out.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, like, oh my god, Varus has no way of staying on the board. Like, there's no real way around this, except that now you just drop Valor, and you're like, alright, well, now we restart. I've got less gold, but at least, you know, because they probably played something reasonable gold if they're not a terrible player, but they have to predict what plot it is, right? If you can take it on the chin for an extra turn or two in order to, like, help them run out of gold. Yeah, there's lots of strategy, which is, you know, good in a card game, right?
Yeah, I mean, and particularly Game of Thrones. So does that mean we're on to rating it?
Can you know, we rate it?
Valor tier.
I think I'm still willing to give it an A. Right?
I mean, it's either an S or like a C. Like it's either the card, like meta-defining, the most meta-defining card since first Snow changed how we all build our decks, and we've still been dealing with repercussions, or it's a card that exists and slowly sees less and less play after everyone goes crazy for it. Like, what percentage of decks run this now? Probably something like 80 as people try it out. What percentage of decks run this in 6 months? Are we down to 40? Are we still at 80? Like, we don't, like...
I don't think it goes below 50 in that time frame, but I don't know.
I think it might. I really think 2005 is punishing.
I mean, it is. But also, you know, at the rate we're getting some of these other cards, I mean, how many games have you been playing, you know, these days that run all the way through your seven plots?
I mean, how many?
Most of mine have not been going that long anymore. They're topping out at five-ish?
Sure.
Which, I mean, I think gives people some flexibility to include this as an
sure, oops. But if you're including it and not using it, meh. Right? Like, how long before it just starts getting cut for things that you might want to use that are more reliable? Like, if you're not using it, how long before you're just like, you know what, First Snow would be more impactful because then when I'm close, I can do that. Or I should go back to Wildfire because then I'm not taking that gold hit. Or even just another economy plot to keep pressure on or whatever. Like, I know Martell runs this. And I know Greyjoy runs. And I know Jumper decks run this. But I'm not sure it's... Oh, and I know everything Tyrell that exists runs this. I keep forgetting Tyrell exists now, sorry. And I know that Night's Watch built in the style of the Night's Watch Kraken and Night's Watch Lion decks run this. But I don't know if literally anything else does, which means I don't think Braithian runs it, I don't think Stark runs it, I don't think Standard Lannister runs it, I don't think Targaryen can afford to run it. Which, you know, depending on how the... I don't think Night's Watch Defense runs it for obvious reasons. Which, all depending on the meta, means, like...
Which...
How much do we see?
You know, maybe means it's in about the position in second edition where ideally we probably want it to be.
I want it impactful in
a lot of decks, but not virtually everywhere like it was in first edition.
First edition as a game worked. And like I think a lot of the reason was the omnipresence of Valor.
I mean, yes. I hate to keep harping on those articles, but I wrote a couple where I outlined in some detail why I thought the entire game was balanced around the existence of Valor.
Right. It was balanced around the assumption that your opponent might have it at all times, which went into every deck building, every decision. Like, you had to have a reason not to have it, not a reason to have it. And I feel like in second edition, where we're going to end up with this card is you have to have a very specific reason to have it. Which I'm not sure I prefer. Like, if this had 4006, I think I would be in love and in heaven. I think at 2005, like, if you're playing Kings of Winter, you just can't play Valor.
Maybe we'll get a location that gives Omen plots, like, plus 2 gold and plus 2
Yeah, but
reserve.
At that point, why not just, like, print a better Valor? Like, I feel like they might have screwed up this plot. Like, and God,
we'll see,
why would...
At least it will rotate out if they did.
True.
And then they can print a new one.
Close call, really, like, every deck should just run a single close call.
Yeah.
Because the odds of, like...
I'm very nearly to that point.
Yeah. You'll run less... dupes of like you won't run an extra Pycelle anymore, you know what I mean? But like you'll still run 3 of the big ones and just you'll assume you'll see a dupe of one and then you can close call the other. Your problem is basically solved. Like your Bob Melisandres, right? Like if you're running 3 Bob, 3 Melisandre and then like 1 or 2 of all the other stuff, it's a reasonable assumption and you're running it like you'll stick 2 or 3 bodyguards in it as an extra backup. you can assume you'll see a dupe or a bodyguard of one, and if the other gets valored away, you just go, oh well, close call next round, or close call that when you think you're starting to dig down into your deck to see another. But the same concept would work for Tywin and Tyrion, the same concept would work for, I don't know, Rob and Fast Eddie, so on.
Roy, yeah. You've been pretty quiet here. Do you have any input, or are you just sitting there, getting everything ready for props and slops?
A little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. I don't necessarily disagree with anything either of you are saying. I feel the best way to put it with the way I feel towards Valor is, I think. It's going to take a while before this card is solved. I think it's going to have a very different impact than First Snow did, in the sense that I think First Snow changed the game almost instantly, and I think maybe on a really high-level competitive level that Valor's going to be closer to the effect of the Wolf Box in the meta, which is there's a little bit of a splash initially, and then sort of a little bit of quiet. And then you're going to really see this card come out in force. And someone is going to figure out a way in which to abuse Valor to play the game somewhat differently than the way in which most decks want to play this game. And I think Dave's deck that he played at Red Saturday is sort of a lighthouse in the dark towards that solution. And Ariane
becomes one of the five best characters in the game.
Absolutely. There's a lot of things out there, and I'm interested to see where Valor takes us. Yeah. So,
speaking of which,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it the S.
Yeah.
Because I believe in optimism.
I also believe in optimism, so I'll give it an S.
I'm not convinced I am right.
I mean, I'm gonna be optimistic about it as well. I think it's up there. I'll be excited to see what we can do with it.
I'm going to my Valor deck right now, my Martell Kings of Summer Valor deck, and adding a couple of Indoran's names because I realized I wasn't running it.
Oh, yeah. That gold boost is probably pretty strong there.
It should be running two of those. If I could find it.
Alright, well, I think next week listeners can tune in to hear us do a little bit more with Valor. But I think for the moment, that's probably going to wrap us up on that. We'll see how things shake out in the future. And we'll head to props and slops. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and start it off, and I'm gonna slop washing cats, bathing them. Not a great idea. I don't recommend anyone try to do that at home, even if they did get fleas. So, yeah, don't do it. It's not fun, and you're gonna get hurt.
The Will Lent story. Don't do it. It's fun, and you're going to get hurt.
And I'll just leave it right there.
God damn it, I'm at 62 cards. I don't know what to cut.
I will slop my internet, which remains kind of inconsistent, and I will give a partial prop and a partial slop to Final Fantasy 15, which I played about 3 or 4 hours of today. Has a really cool art design, good voice acting, but damn does it start slow. Damn does it start slow.
Damn does it start slow?
Yeah.
Does it start slow?
Damn does it start slow.
I've been hearing that a lot.
Man, I think I'm running this deck at 62.
Cutting props to 62 cards?
Should be 61. 61 is the number of good decks. Very upset. I'm going to have to send this to 10 people until someone says, cut something that makes me.
probably the third match. That's fairly.
Well,
having a nice conversation with myself.
Yeah.
Hey, slops to Burning on the Sand for not making the first deck it's eligible for.
Ooh, and here I thought you loved it.
I did. Doesn't fit. Indoran's name and his Viper Eyes is going to be incredible in the battle. Because yes. If you can pull the like one character or two character, one of the two characters they have in hand, and then Valor.
Yeah. I think it'll be strong. I mean, and in that same vein, Seen in the Flames.
Yeah. And yeah, those are the only two things that have that effect. But yes. For some reason, I thought there was a Lannis villain, but I think that was first edition.
Yeah. Though, you know, on the flip side, it also means that I think Heads on Pikes also starts looking interesting to play when you're up against the Valor to knock out something they were holding on to.
Sure. Just hope they're not running enough extra draw for it to change, right? I'm cutting Dawn. I really like Dawn and the Valor meta. I'm cutting Dawn.
We'll see. I don't know. Past that, I think I do have a prop to the Shadow and Bone, the first book of the Grisha trilogy. I backed up and picked up that trilogy. I talked before about Six of Crows and its sequel that I had read over the last few months. So I picked up the first trilogy in that world. It's a little different. I think not as good. First-person novels tend to bug me. But I still do like that world.
So you don't like first-person novels?
As a general rule, no.
You realize we're doing a Game of Thrones.
It's not first person.
Isn't it first person with multiple different first people?
No.
No?
First person would be I walked to the throne.
Yeah, I thought chapter was
crown on my head.
Am I crazy? Is it third person? Maybe I just haven't read it long enough.
Yeah, it's third person.
I thought each chapter was first person from a different first person.
Nope.
Okay. Well, it's been too long since I've read it.
Third person. You're the English teacher. Third person. What's the non-omniscient third person? Limited third person.
Limited.
Yeah, I know what the terms mean. I just didn't realize because I haven't read it long enough that in my head it was first person from each character, not third person limited. Okay, I was wrong. It happens.
Yep.
I was right about all the cards, but I was wrong about that.
I am like clipping that soundbite out and I'm keeping that handy. Aaron Glazer saying I was wrong. It happens.
In the meantime, I want to prop Marvel Future Fight because it's an awful lot of fun. It's grindy and silly, but like, it's a bunch of superheroes, and I'm a nerd, so I like it.
Always good. Well, I think I'm pretty tapped out. It's been a relatively slow week here myself.
I'm tapped out as well, and one might say that means that we're all falling into
Valar Morghulis,
the danger zone.
I like my way better.
All right, gentlemen, I've got to go.
This is the chapter.
Let's talk some cards.
Yeah, let's get into this. All right. 3, 2, 1.
His name is Craven. He likes white ravens.
Wait, what?
Damn it.
Wrong cast? Fuck. Sorry. My bad.
Yeah. That's how we're starting out episode 300. You're just 26 episodes too early.
We should commission a song for the 300th episode.
We should just do their song. We should literally play their song.
I feel like Greg can play the guitar and used to fiddle with writing songs. The question is, could he write us a funny one?
I mean, SoCal could.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Maybe we should just have them do a limerick for us for every episode.
Can they do an every episode limerick? There's already almost 300 of these suckers.
Well, did we just start the podcast?
I think we just started the
podcast. Inadvertently.
Oh, shit.
I'll record the quote later and throw it in or something. I don't know.
Fine. Are we just going to continue? Do you want to read a quote, like, since you usually do that?
I can read a quote. Okay. And then I'd say we can just continue from there. I'll move those two chunks around. That's no big deal.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
His name is Craven.
He likes my Raven. What's the third line? And he will always use them to
reduce your gold?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Because they say it in totally Britishness, and I'm like, he'll always use them to. He cancels saves.
Which you can't even do in second edition.
He likes it when the opposition has bad days.
Yeah, there you go.
Opposition, that's so English.
It's a good word. Why? Because they're literate?
Yeah, that's way too right, many syllables for the U.S.
So we gonna redo this introduction then?
Welcome to our podcast about the podcast about A Game of Thrones.
You know, I really want... Why has no one done a meta podcast that just talks about the other podcast?
Isn't that what Second Sons kind of is? Because we do talk about the other podcasts a lot.
I think we just mostly make fun of people.
Yeah, like it's not the same as just literally being a podcast about podcasts.
I think we have.
Anybody want to start another podcast with me?
Sure, I'm always up for starting a podcast with you.
Yes.
Yeah. I should have known.
It will be very popular with the Facebook group.
It'll be very popular with Patrick Day, and no one else will listen.